Well, I'm not 97, but I still have trouble getting up a step. Well, I got to tell you that I heard Jim Downing give a message out in Wichita Falls with all this electronic stuff that you saw him use there a while ago. And I have to apologize that I'm not in the old Corps. I'm a younger staff, and I don't have all that abilities. And I prefer to save my Christian joy by not using electronic equipment. So I have to use the more modern and update approach, which is called direct presentation. And in Jim's message, that became stupid. Remember when he said it's just passing out a bunch of knowledge and not relevant to the intake person? Well, sorry, stupid people, here it comes. That's all I got. I will try to keep you awake, though, with a few stories and illustrations. And then Arnold, halfway through this long tirade of mine, will be a testimony from him of how to make a godly decision. I called it originally Finding God's Will for My Life, and that's what it becomes, is you're looking for the calling of God or something like that. So that wasn't exactly what I was worried about. It was more like how to make a good decision. And I thought, well, that's not really all there is to it either. It's how to make a godly decision, which will be a good decision if done properly. So that's what the background of this is. One time there was a young man. I better pray. Someone prayed for me already, but I'll pray for us together. Then I'll tell you a little story. Lord, we ask your presence. We invite your presence. You are with us. You promised to be. We ask you to speak the word from God for our hearts, to speak the word in season for him that is weary, and those who are still wrestling with issues that they feel unresolved so far. This message may not be relevant to that, but help them anyway. Give us knowledge that would be applicable in our lives and in how to make decisions that would honor you in all aspects of our existence and our lives and our families and our work. In Jesus' name we pray this. Amen. One young man heard about an old guy that was known for his wisdom. So he thought, I'm just going to go ask that man some questions. And he went over and got the kind of introduced to the guy. And he said, what do you want, young man? How can I help you? He said, well, I hear you have a great reputation for wisdom. And I'd like to know how you got that wisdom. I'm young, and I want to end up being a wise old man, too. He says, well, I got that by making decisions. Well, how did you learn to make those good decisions? Well, by making a lot of bad decisions. And that's about the way it goes, isn't it? You make a few bad ones, you learn to ask different questions before you make the next decision. So, as I prepared these thoughts, based on a short talk I gave to the gang up in Clarksville some weeks, a month ago maybe, it came about because of observations I have made in our society and what I'm experiencing up in Clarksville that reflect on, but it's not the real meaning of the book, Dumbing Down of America by Charles Sykes, is it? And it was about the education system in America, but it struck me that things are changing. People I know that love God, and the team we have, 10 people on it, 2 married couples and 3 or 4 single, a couple of girls, a couple of guys, and I meet with them, and things are different. And I can't quite figure it out. My communications is breaking down. I can't figure that out. And so I just began to think, something's going on. What is this? And before I come to my answer to how to make a good decision, I discovered that in addition to these cultural things, there are basically three aspects of this will of God discovery, revelation, however you want to say it, that need to be looked at. One is, what is included in God's will, and how is it revealed? 2, how is our culture affecting our thinking? How is the culture affecting our thinking? I'll get into that with some illustrations, try to cut it short, but not all of them are directly relevant to making a decision, but they are relevant to our existence and how we are relating to one another and looking at certain facts about our life. And it boggles my mind. In between that and the where I'll actually give my five or six answers to how to make a decision, I'm going to ask Arnold to give a story of a decision he had to make and how he made it, which will illustrate most of the points that I have to share. And those points I can speed up on. So whenever the time comes, and Charlie, what is my time limit anyway? 5:30, is that what it is? Well, I've got to keep you awake for a while first. And
I'm sorry, 5:45.
Oh, well, I've got a whole bunch of time. Well, I'll try not to push it too far, but I have a lot of illustrations I don't have to give. I want interaction, and we'll try to give an opportunity to stop at these three sections and let you feedback to me, ask questions, whatever. My notes are basically readable, so if you want to interrupt me, that's fine. It won't throw me too far off. If it does, it'll just miss another story, probably. But let me, the last thing will be what characterizes a good decision, how to make it. What's the process? The first thing I mentioned was how's God's will, and what does it include? Well, there's a number of ways you can say it, but one is there's a sovereign will, there's the perfect will, and there's the permissive will. God has a sovereign will over the nations. And I've gotten some of these verses down here. If I took time to look them up and I hadn't memorized them all, it'd take too long. Psalm 33, 9 to 11 says, He spoke, it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm. The Lord foils the plans of the nations. He thwarts the purposes of the peoples. That seems to be what God's doing all the time. That's the way He does. In Ezekiel, He's referred to 303 times as sovereign Lord. That tells me He's sitting up there high on the hill. No matter what you're doing down here, He's sovereign. Furthermore, more specifically, Ephesians 1, 9 to 11, He made known to us the mystery of His will according to His good pleasure, which He purposed in Christ. That's key. What He purposed in Christ. In verse 11 of that passage I just mentioned, in Him we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of Him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of His will. I was just talking to a guy a moment ago about raising money for a summer training program. Do you think that's somewhere in God's will? Maybe. Sounds like it can't get out of it. If God wills it, it's there. It's His sovereign will. Now, the secret of understanding all of God's will in this way is an interesting verse I memorized. I don't know who gave it to me. Soon after I started walking with the Lord, I realized that the will of God is not fully revealed. He didn't obligate to reveal it to me or us. But in the Deuteronomy 29:29, He gives us a frightening thought. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. But those things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. The secret things still belong to Him. He didn't have to tell us everything. We couldn't handle it if He did. But that which is revealed is so we can obey it for us and our children. Now, His perfect will, you wonder, where does that come from? Well, have you ever memorized Romans 12:2? That you do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Not bad. Some call this His moral will. Well, that helps you, okay. But they are the things that He wants us to do and how He wants us to do them. Those things are known to us so that we may obey them. Proverbs 4:11 says, I guide you in the way of wisdom, lead you along straight paths. Psalm 32 says, I will instruct you the way to go, blah, 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 blah. How does He do that? You know the answer, in His word. The entrance of thy word gives light, gives understanding to the simple. Psalm 119:105. The entrance of thy word gives light. If you're going to walk in the light, you have to walk in the Word. Psalm 119:105, your word is a lamp. And in Psalm 119:1-30, then it says, the entrance of your word gives light. I quoted those in reverse. Then there is his permissive will. And that's simply, to me, the result of what you do that was not according to his perfect will. And he's patient enough not to smash you. He just smacks you in the backside. That's permissive. You broke his known will by your own stubborn pride. You just did it. I know it's wrong, but it feels so good. Just do it. And the Deuteronomy 4:31, the Lord your God is a merciful God. If you think about the things you do wrong every day, and you do ask forgiveness, and he forgives you. But that's because he's a merciful God. But it's his permission that you aren't smashed in the head. And he's with you. He'll forgive you and help you. Count that a treasure, not something to step on and just go along. It says in Proverbs, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline. Do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves. And as a father, the son in whom he delights. Boy, that's good, isn't it? He disciplines us, like I said in one group somewhere. Guilt is good. Praise God, I feel guilty when I look at porno or get mad at somebody or say something slanderous about one of my coworkers or something. Totally dirt. And God gives you a smite in the back of the head. Hey, that's crazy. No peace with that. You confess that and get right. That's good. But it is like a father would correct his son. And he is merciful. How is our culture affecting our thinking? Well, here are some things I've run into that I want to just mention some of them. They're not directly relevant, but they're relevant to what's happening in the culture. And it just struck me, I'm not a cultural student. I need Jim Peterson to help me with that. But here are some things I've run into. One man wrote in a book I read about, because I read some books and read some of my old notes and everything about finding God's will, and I've got them with me somewhere in my case. An old book by Blaine Smith. Jim, you probably remember it, Finding the Will of God. How to Find the Will of God, Blaine Smith. Long, long years ago. But they're still in print, brand new one. And that and one now called Just Do Something by some pastor, which says everybody's a Christian, just do what, you know, you're in the Spirit, just do whatever it is probably right. Well, I've joked about that before, like I just told you a moment ago, to tell Tracy over there in Johnson, Jefferson, wherever it is, to do something, it might be right, meaning get off of it and act, do something. Well, okay, I joke about it, but to teach that in a book to young Christians, just do something, it might be right, because you're in the Spirit. Who says you're in the Spirit when you're deliberately disobeying God in something? I don't know what that thing meant, but I read it. But in one of them I read said, people today between the ages of 18 and 30 have many more decisions to make than I had in my time. But his point was that we know more, but we are driven by a cultural effect upon us to decide most everything based on our feelings. They have more decisions to make, but only one tool by which to make that decision, their feelings. You remember the song, if it feels so good in the middle of the night, why not do it? I thought that was kind of a carnal song. I figured they weren't thinking about prayer in the middle of the night. And I don't even know who wrote it or why. I didn't sing it. I couldn't. But a couple of weeks ago, we had a dinner at Kenny, the guy who was with me here. Kenny, where are you? Yeah. Oh, here you are. Hey, Kenny, basketball player. Yes, sir. Kenny had one of many dinners we've had at his home on his apartment on Wednesday nights, bringing in some people. And one of our fellows who was with me last year here, the biology student, Chris O'Brien, brought two or three of his fellows. One of them brought his brother. When his brother walked in, he said, well, brother, I'm going to see Dad tomorrow. Oh, you are? What for? I'm going to ask him if I can quit. Quit what? Quit school. Why? I'm just tired. I just don't feel like it. I've studied all I want to study. What, you're 4 or 5 weeks from the end of this semester, your second, third year, whatever it was? Yeah, but I'm just tired. I just don't want to do it. Well, what do you think you're going to do to get a job? Oh, I don't know. I may join the Marines or the Army or something. Now, wait a minute. Your girl is in Japan in the Air Force. She's coming home, and she's going to get out of the Air Force so you all can be together. You're going to get out of college and go join the Army or the Marines because you can't get a job on the market right now, and you don't have your degree yet. And that makes sense to you? Oh, I just feel like it. I don't feel it. Over and over and over, they tried to talk some sense into that kid. His only answer, I just don't feel like it. And I remember that statement I just read to you. That is part of my message. It happens. I just don't feel like it. Well, la-dee-da, welcome to the world. Now, Kenny knows who I'm talking about here, but I'll tell you, I've talked to every person I'm using in my mind as an illustration without giving you their name. You wouldn't know them, and I don't mean to slander them, because I've talked to each one and told them what I wanted to do, and they said, okay, that's fine. Because I've challenged them on how they made this particular statement or decision. And so after that discussion, I have one that says, you can do it online. Have you ever heard that? You can do it online. I believe you can do everything except have sex online. Everything that comes up, you just do that online. Well, this one guy, he's a good guy. And I've been helping him now a couple of years. And he was responsible for, helping me. We didn't make him responsible, but he said he'd do it, to keep our registration at the campus as a registered campus organization. And I asked him, everything's okay. I did it. I do it online. Yeah, I did it. Just taking care of it. Well, what about Dr. Bett? Dr. Bett says, I got her in there too. Yeah, everything's okay. And he told Tom and Kenny and one of our new married guys was there and so forth. And the same question came up, are we a registered organization? Are we legal? Yes. Are we going to get money for support going to conferences? Well, no, we missed a couple of meetings. What meetings? I never heard about any meetings. Well, there's 3 or 4 meetings where the president meets with all the student groups, just about 15, 20 minutes, but you've got to be there to keep qualified. I never heard anything about it. Thank you. Tell me more. Are we registered or are we not? Well, yeah, but we won't get money because nobody was there. So then we changed officers. We appointed a young lady named Beth to our president. Actually, they did, didn't they, Kenny? That was a women's revolution. These girls got together and organized us. And they made one guy the vice president, but made this girl the president. And some other girl was the social secretary and all that stuff. And I said, okay, we'll accept. We had a meeting and we agreed. Okay. Well, the next week, Beth calls me up and says, Noel, I went down to the office to make sure of our registration. Notice she said, I went down to the office. That's not done, according to my friend. You don't go there. They don't want to talk to you. Well, you call. No, you can't call them. They don't want to talk on the phone. I text them, and I answered on the internet. Okay. She walks down there and says, I'd like to look at the registration for the navigators. Who? Who you mean? The navigators. We've been an organization here for 8 or 10 years. Well, no, you hadn't the last 3 years. What do you mean you hadn't? Well, you didn't fill out the forms. So I think, what? Don't tell me my friend lied to me. So bold or dashed lie. I did it on the internet. And he didn't. Well, he did, in fact. But she found out there's one form has to be brought with all the signatures of the people in your group with your sponsor signature up here, Dr. Betts in our case. Hand that in. Then you can do all the other stuff by attending the meetings and sending information on the internet. It doesn't help to not get the facts. He didn't get the facts. He kept operating on the assumption. Have you ever heard never assume anything about anybody, any place? It does help to remember that. And the dear guy meant well. And I've talked to him about it. He says, I don't know what happened. Well, I do know that he got married, and I do know he's kind of in a funk and all that. But my goodness, for 2.5, 3 years, we've been watching this thing happen. Oh, brother, where am I going with this? So another one of these little little things is that's the way it's always been done. Well, we heard that in every generation. I think she used that one. But it means, I believe that things have not changed, so I won't bother to check on it. Which means the fault isn't that you say, we've always done it this way. The fault is you assume that you know everything you need to know. And you don't have to ask anybody anything. I know. I know what to do. Oh, you do? How do you know? Because we've always done it that way. Well, I said to this young man in July, I guess, you're going to start back in school or whatever it was, get some classes in August or September. What's your startup date this year? They told me. Now, are you sure you can get that course in August? Well, yeah, we always have it. Well, are you going to check or anything? No. I'll get started later, but it doesn't take, but just do it on the internet. I just sign up for them and that'll work. Well, what if someone's signed up before you? Oh, not for this course. They wouldn't be that many people. Not for this course. Okay. So he didn't make it. He waited too late. He didn't get in. And another time, another student had that situation. He had to come out for various reasons and quit school for a certain family problem, crisis, and wanted to get back and work at the campus like he always had for 2 or 3 years, just last year there. And I tried to get him to go in early and find out about this, and this. Oh, no, it's okay, and I've got my job at the library, and I've got this, and I've got that. Till he went in to find out and to get his job at the library and found out that you can't work in the library because you're not a student. You're not in the university anymore. Well, why not? Because you quit. We worked our tail off to get him to take an incomplete instead of just quit and walk away from it. And he wouldn't go back because the internet emailed to the professor and he didn't answer him. I'm not going to go talk to him. He didn't want to talk to me. He didn't answer my email. So what? You expect the professor to jump front and center just because some student sent an email? Are you going to appeal to him on an email rather than going talking to him face to face to assure him I want to come back and finish, but I've got to take care of this family matter? Why not do it face to face? Or you can do it on the internet. I am so tired of hearing that stupid statement. Unbelievable. Well, he didn't make it. Found out he couldn't get his classes either. Couldn't get a scholarship, which he wanted. I'd have told him he wouldn't get that, not as a non-student and non-full-time. And he could have gotten a loan, but he said, oh, no loans. Uh-uh. Not going to take a loan. I've borrowed all the money I'm going to borrow. But you've just got 2 or 3 months, and you'd have your degree and go get a job. But you can't get a job except in the gutter with no degree. You're back on the bottom feeding for a McDonald's job. Okay. But that's where we were. Tools and communications. Back to the texting. Now, Kenny and I fight over this texting too a little bit. But it means I sent him a text. Therefore, I've communicated. He knows what I wanted. It's up to him to do it. In some cases. Or I send him a text, or he answered me from a text, and I will answer him when I feel like it. But the question is he waiting for an answer? Does it mean anything to you that he is communicating with you back and forth and all of a sudden you stop? Well, I'll get to it next week. But what was his end of his last text? They're not thinking this way from my experience. I'm just only by my experience. Talked to Kenny about it on the way down. He was working, and we were supposed to leave to come here. I didn't know when he got off from work. Didn't know he was working that day. He has 1 or 2 days a week. It varies. And I said, Kenny, I didn't know you were working. Did you ever tell me that? Well, maybe not. Well, I don't know. But we made it. We connected okay because I had texted him. And 3 or 4 days later, I get an answer. Are we going to leave at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock? I want to leave at 6. Can you come get me? I said, well, no, I'd rather you come by here. I'm on the way to the camp. So he came out and joined me, put his car in the garage, and we left. But still, we had not been clear in back and forth. Others are worse than that. I mean, it's just deliberate. It seems that there's no anxiety or anxiousness to respond back. Why is it passé to send an email to a student? Why is it passé to call on the telephone, which they're for, I thought, but I'm told you don't call a student? No way. That's rude. Because he's not prepared to talk to you. If he's not prepared to talk to you, that would embarrass him if you ask him a question. So I text this idiot. And I don't get an answer. And the next day I don't get an answer. And the next day I don't get an answer. What do I know? I ask a guy, I won't tell who it is, he might be here, if he wanted to have breakfast with me on Wednesday. I ask him on Sunday in an email, a text. I know how to text. Jim Downing, I heard he texts, so I learned to text. No, there was a fellow I did ask if we could have breakfast on Wednesday, not knowing if he worked that day or not. I didn't get an answer. But on Thursday, I got a text that asked me another question. When can we have breakfast? Well, when you start reading your texts, we might start with that. Now, what's going on here? And those kind of people are wanting to make good decisions. What is flipping in their brain? I don't understand it, but there's something going on that is very much the dumbing down of America. Excuses. I'll stop with this one. When a person tells you, there's two things I could say on that. When he tells you, I forgot. That is not an apology. That is not an excuse. That is a cause for them not doing what they said they would do. It's a cause. They're not responsible. I forgot. Meaning some unknown force made me forget, so it's not my problem. You and I both know the problem is they didn't care enough about the appointment, whatever it was. They didn't miss it when it was to go by and get their check. And it probably wasn't missed when they were supposed to have a final exam. But on that little thing we talked about, they didn't follow through. And we know that fundamentally it's because he or she did not care enough to mark it in their famous iPad or iPod or whatever that thing is they carry around in their pocket. And therefore, it wasn't in their notebook to say, on Tuesday morning, I want to do this. And it wasn't in their notes anywhere, like on this pad I'm carrying around. That's where I put my appointments, this weekend conference. But they didn't. And I'm working with a fella, and he's a good man. He's learning very much. But I asked him last Saturday, I said, do you realize you haven't missed an appointment in about 3 or 4 months? But you have not done 3 or 4 things that were asked by our team for you to do. I asked you 2 things, and one of the other team members asked you to do something. And you said in the group, I'll do it. But you know why you didn't do it? Well, I forgot, I guess. No, you never wrote it down. I bought him one of these things, planners. To use that planner. And he's been doing it for our appointments, but he didn't for this other request. He was going to do this for this person. He was going to call my buddy Justin. I was out of town. He was going to call Justin to get him to go with him to one of our meetings, our NAV night, we call it, at campus. And he forgot. Sure, you forgot because you didn't write it down. There's where we've got to come to grips with some things. So I chomped on him a bit, and he took it. He's very teachable. And I'm trying to get him to know, don't tell me, we prayed about it and had peace. That is when you and your wife bought a dumb old house, 15 years old, with a bad roof and bad everything else. And don't tell me we prayed about it and have peace when I bought that new car I've been wanting like I want my breath. And I just knew God was with me. And they know, I've told 2 or 3 of them, don't ever say that to me because it's a lie. You prayed about something you wanted so you could get it the way you wanted it. And like Jim Downing says, when you wanted it, what you want, and now I want. And he's beginning to believe me that is wrong to think that. Yes, pray about it, and we're going to get into that. But to say we prayed about it, mean we and my wife. And in this case, I said, okay, tell me this. When you bought that house, who did you ask? What do you mean? Did you ask anybody for advice? Advice about what? Whether you should buy that house. Well, no. Well, what about your dad? He's a pastor. He's a wonderful fellow. You may not agree with everything he does in the church. He's a good old Baptist pastor to me. I think he'd have been honored if you'd asked him. Well, I never thought about that. No, you were just thinking about me, and my wife. If you were thinking about how your parents would have been honored, if you just ask them, look, Dad, what do you think about this house? He might have saved you $4,000. Air conditioner, hot water heater, floor in the bathroom, leaks in the bathroom, hot water under the sink floor, and they can't get to it because the pipes are under an extended section that has no crawl space, and on and on and on. He goes, now he wants to sell it, and he knows it's God's will. It's costing too much money. So with that little bit of history, Arnold, come and tell us how to make a good decision, and then I'll come back with the pieces that I'm trying to share.
Well, Noel has been speaking about how our culture influences how we go about making decisions. And, you know, as it turns out, I kind of like our culture. For one thing, I'm an American. And so as an American, that means nobody gets to tell me what to do. I'm free. I can approach things however I want, and nobody can tread upon that. So, I mean, that's a great thing about American culture. And I'm also a Protestant, and I think almost everybody here is. And Protestant culture is great because if we think about the Reformation and what did the Reformation stand for, at least what do we think now that it stood for, we talk about things like the priesthood of the believer and how everybody has the ability, then the right and the privilege to sit down with Scripture, to meet with God, and to have God speak to him about whatever God wants to say as we open the Word with him alone. Together with him. And so Protestant culture is a wonderful thing because what that gives me is autonomy. I can just go meet with God. God can talk to me, and we can go off and do whatever God told me to do. And so I love being an American, and I love being a Protestant because both of those mean that I'm free. I can do what I want. I can make my decisions. Or at least that's how I tend to think. But somebody said once, there's a world of difference between having an inspired Bible and having an inspired interpretation of the Bible. And so what's the difference between having an inspired Bible and having an inspired interpretation? Well, we might say what would make my interpretation inspired is if God would just speak to me directly. And I would say for myself, you know, being a Methodist and then a Presbyterian, you know, I'm not exactly in the Pentecostal vein of things, but there have been a couple times in my life where I felt very clearly that God was speaking directly to me. One of those times was in my freshman year of college. I had just gotten back from a conference very similar to this one, and I was unpacking, and just suddenly and unexpectedly, I felt that God said to me, "What are you doing at Oregon State University? You should be at the University of Oregon." It came from nowhere, pretty much. At least that's how it seemed to me. It was clear. It was unambiguous. And it was very direct. A different time, 20 years later, almost exactly 20 years later, I was sitting out at the porch of my backyard at my house, drinking a cup of coffee, praying, I think smoking a cigar. Because, you know, there's a lot of incense in the Old Testament, so the cigar, you know, it's kind of getting back to my roots. And as I was doing that, a very similar thing happened. It's like, what are you doing living here in Lilburn? You really ought to move. And I was perfectly happy with my house. I was well on my way to getting it paid off. I had no complaints whatsoever. Wasn't looking to change. Where'd this come from? And it very much seemed like God is speaking directly to me about this. Well, and with that moving idea, there was an idea of where to move, and there was an idea of why to move, and it had to do with the little ministry we had going on at a small college in another part of town, and how that would get me both closer to work as well as closer to this ministry. So it wasn't a baseless thought, but it was definitely an unexpected thought. Well, I think in my case, In both of these situations, what I found myself wondering then is, okay, this was very clear, but was it God? Was it my own whims? Was it maybe Satan trying to throw me off track? Was it just that I had a bad meal and it's indigestion? You know, I don't know. So how do I figure this out? And so one opportunity would be to say, well, it was so clear, it must be God, I just need to do it. But I took a different approach. And the reason for that is I really think it's beneficial to have a healthy dose of self-skepticism. In my own case, I tend to think I'm very good at evaluating situations. I'm very good at lining things out. And like any person, I think that my perception is the right perception. If I thought it was wrong, I'd change. So obviously, whatever I'm thinking must be the right perception. But I think I've learned by observing others and maybe through some other things that it really is a good idea to have some self-skepticism. Proverbs 24:6 says, 28:26 is the one I wanted to refer to, says, he who trusts in himself is a fool. So no matter how clearly I may think I'm perceiving something, if I just trust in myself, that's probably a foolish thing to do. And most of us here know Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. It's a very similar concept. Don't lean on your own understanding. So with that self-skepticism, maybe some of that has come over the years, I think, from a habit I had for about 11 years, which was every day I would read a chapter from the book of Proverbs. And so every month I would get through the book, and I did that every month for 11 years, just trying to permeate my mind with some common sense that God gives us through the book of Proverbs. And so in Proverbs, we find things like a fool, 18:2 says, a fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. Or another one that's helpful to me is 15:22, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. So in these two situations where I felt that maybe God spoke to me here, there were a couple things I did, and they were very simple things. This is not revolutionary, but one was I continued to pray, to continue to ask for God's guidance, that God, if this is of you, then please verify this, and if it's not of you, then please make that clear to me. Another thing I did was discuss it widely, and what I mean by that is I talked to a lot of people. So in the case of the school transfer, obviously I did some research to find out what has to happen in order to transfer. Would my credits all transfer? I talked to my parents, who are not necessarily, well, one wasn't a believer and the other wasn't what I would call a mature believer. But just by virtue of being my parents, they had been alive longer than I and had more life experience. And so maybe they would have some insight into the matter. I talked to the leader of the NAV ministry at Oregon State, where I was, and I went down to Eugene to talk to the NAV leader at the University of Oregon, where I thought God was directing me. And so I talked to a lot of people. I investigated a lot of things. What I found as I did that in this case was everything was lining up. My parents had no objection, which, if you ever met my parents, would be amazing. The credits would transfer easily enough. The ministries on both ends were receptive. There was actually a guy who could be a roommate when I moved down in the following fall. Everything just lined up and seemed to fit. So at that point, because the facts and the counsel were lining up with everything else that it seemed like God was saying to my feelings or to my impressions, I felt the confidence to move ahead. And in retrospect, I think it was very much, in fact, the right decision. With the house situation, it was very similar. I talked to my parents again. They didn't tell me I was stupid for thinking about doing that. Obviously, met with real estate agents, looked at various housing situations, talked to some of the guys who were in this little ministry that we had going on about would they be interested in moving in with me if I were to move over there, talked to my employer just to make sure they weren't planning to transfer me out of town in the next month or something, because then it wouldn't be too great to move and leave again. And so just checked all the facts, of course, checked my financial situation to see what would be an appropriate amount to spend. And there again, everything seemed to line up. So I went ahead and made the move, and I would say in retrospect, it was very much the right move and the right thing to do. But so I think kind of trying to pull this all together, I don't think I mentioned Proverbs 15:22, but it's really the same thing. Plans fail for lack of counsel. With many advisors, they succeed. So as you read through Proverbs, you just see over and over again, you know, the fool trusting in himself, the wise man being open to counsel, being open to advice. I mean, ultimately, the decision is still yours, and it has to be. It's not appropriate for us to say, I don't know whom to marry, you choose for me. Or I don't know which house I should buy, you tell me. I think, wasn't it Dawson Trotman who said God gave you a lot of leading when he gave you a brain? So, you know, I'm very much in favor of using the brain. But I'm also very much in favor of being skeptical and bringing in wise advice, wise counsel, test the facts, check it out, and make sure that everything really aligns. And I think that'll fit in with what Noel is about to say about some of the buoys for decision-making as we move along. So thanks.
Good. Well, the thoughts I have do relate to buoys in the harbor, though I was never in the Navy. I may have the whole category muddled up here a bit. But the idea has been to me, and I learned it from someone else earlier, that if you were bringing a ship into harbor, and say down at Norfolk, and you've got a lot of things to go through and the channel and so forth, there are green lights and red lights on buoys. And as the helmsman or steersman or the captain or whatever you want to call the guy that's steering the ship, who's responsible for the ship at that point, and he's looking ahead, it doesn't really matter that over here there's some red lights, but when he's looking ahead, the lights better be green where he's going, or he better make an adjustment. And I'm not sure if this one turns red, which way he would turn, that way or this way. But he better do something to make that red one become a green one, or he's going to hit something. Is that basically right, Jim? Is that about right? Okay. Then we got the expert captain on duty here. So I want to use that as a, and give, quickly I'll get through the points, but he's already given you some of the verses. I can save that. But what I did was list what I thought were steps. And I added a couple because of some of the problems I've listed and mentioned about, thinking that would help to work against our cultural effect on us, to discern more properly what we are learning about the will of God. And you see how Arnold did it. The first buoy that I see in the harbor, I state it this way. It's called, consider this decision important enough to pray about it. Well, we know we can't pray about everything. Dr. Friesen over at Milton Noble School of the Bible has a deal. He says, you don't have to pray about what you're going to eat at breakfast. No. But if you're going to eat 3 eggs and 3 hotcakes and 3 pieces of bacon, 2 sausages and 1 pound of butter, I'd say there's a few verses that would say you ought to pray about something before you eat that breakfast. But otherwise, yeah, walking with God, you can eat a breakfast, whether it's cold cereal or eggs or like this morning, the waffles and the biscuits and the eggs and the sausage. And I did way beyond prayer when I added on that last thing down there. And then one of my buddies sitting at the table, he went back and got another sausage, but I won't tell who Mike did that. There's 2 Mikes here. You figure it out. But Dr. J. Vernon McGee told a story one time of a lady that came up to him and after a service, and she said, I want to ask you, Dr. McGee, how large a matter should it be before I bother God with it? And wise old Dr. McGee says, ma'am, what you consider your largest request would be peanuts to God. Be cautious about making decisions without praying. At least give God the option. Wasn't that Proverbs 3, 5, and 6? Acknowledge God might have something to say about it. At least acknowledge that and see if he doesn't have something to say about it. The James 1, 5 has always encouraged me because I always feel so dumb. If any of you lacks wisdom, and I feel that way a lot, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraids not, doesn't criticize you for asking. So you have freedom to ask if it is about, Lord, what shall I have for breakfast? I think he'd hear that and give you some urging of some kind if you're about to eat something he shouldn't. But you don't expect him to obey for you. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 we've mentioned. But there's another thing here. When you have a decision, how do I know I'm not leaning on my own knowledge? How do you know that? Well, you start by at least praying about it. And it may not be that we prayed about it, but what we prayed about it. Which is why I mentioned about the fellow with the old house. And have you prayed about it as Arnold did, asking God to reveal, if you're up for it, show me that too. I like to think where once in Hebrews it says, you have not let resisted against sin to the point of shedding your blood. I like to pray when it's a serious decision, God, if this is not your will, I'm about to marry this girl. And Jim Downing told me it was okay. So really, if it's not right, break my leg, please. I don't want to marry the wrong girl. Well, you don't do that all the time. But he could, couldn't he? If it's really serious, I would pray something like that. And I have. I like to pray it for other people. One of the first guys I recruited in Sweden, I met this fellow at a special meeting he came to, and he was in the army and all that. And one of the girls in our team had introduced me, really a neat guy. I liked him, a soccer player, and he was on the soccer team for the army. And really a sharp guy, wonderful Christian background, which is rare in Sweden. And I invited him to come to our conference like this one, a weekend conference coming. Well, yeah, I couldn't do that. I'm in the army. Well, you got to come. Well, yeah, I got a leave, but I won't have another leave for 6 months or whatever it was. I said, well, you could, couldn't you? Yeah. Well, would you mind if I pray that God would do whatever is necessary to get you to that conference if you think it would be significant for your life? Yeah, if you want to. Well, I go to the conference. I hadn't heard anything. He hadn't registered. But all of a sudden, he comes walking in like this guy with that thing around his arm. He had broken his arm in a soccer match, and they had to get him seen, a doctor down in Stockholm who knew how to handle that kind of a problem, whatever it was. He got there on Thursday night, and the doctor was out until Monday, so he had nothing to do, so he comes to our conference. And I says, well, thank God for a broken arm, huh? God can do it without being mean, but it just got him to the conference. I don't mind praying that way once in a while for you. Now, you remember the story in Joshua when they were going into the land, and God had told him in Exodus and Deuteronomy, don't make treaties with the enemy. But they did with these people that faked it and came over the mountain, had old bags for their milk and old bags for their wine and the rusty old bread. And, oh, we're from a long way off. We've heard about you. We've come. Please make a treaty with us that you won't hurt us and blah, blah, blah. And they partook of their victuals and did not pray and ask God. And they suffered for it for a long, long time. Those people were just over the next mountain, and they were a thorn in their flesh for years. You pray about it, and then that day when you partook of food with someone, that was a contract in itself almost. And it meant some kind of a treaty. Secondly, I say affirm your surrender to his lordship. That'll help you know that you're truly committed to him and truly looking to him, acknowledging him, and you are praying about it for his guidance. And let me read you something that Dr. Shoemaker said. Samuel Shoemaker was an Episcopal priest in New York back about the early 1900s. And he was active in the Oxford movement, which is interesting in England. He was active in founding the AA ministry in our country. In fact, Bill Wilson of the Alcoholics Anonymous says that credits him with developing their 12 steps, which is what they use to help a man come off of alcoholic addiction. Well, I didn't know he did all that, but I do know he was a great priest and knew the Lord. He says, guidance is one of the severest tests of the Christian walk. It touches his life at every point, prayer, knowledge of the word, personal temperament, tendency to haste, advice of friends, reliance upon our own wisdom, impatience with delays, submission to the will of God in all matters in question. All these become factors in seeking guidance, and they test to the limit our own personal walk with God. And I came across that with this fellow I talked to this afternoon. That is a test for him. Everything is jumbled and he's waiting and how can this happen and will this happen and how can I make it happen and what if I don't make it happen? Will God make it happen? All kinds of questions. But be sure you're waiting on him to do it. So it's not just have you prayed, but what have you prayed? And you don't have to pray that your leg will be broken. But you do need to pray, God, stop me if this is wrong. God, show me, confirm that this is your will, not mine. And you'll be at safe haven when you get into the port. There's a third one that says, seek his wisdom. Where is that? In the word. Proverbs 2, 1 to 11 says, the Lord gives wisdom, knowledge and understanding. Verse 9, then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. And you'll find it in the word. As you read and pray over the word about this decision, whatever it is. As I mentioned earlier, 130 of Psalms and 119-105 in the Psalms. So we know that he does not speak to every issue in our lives, but he gives examples, principles, and promises, and some direct do's and don'ts that relate to what that job is going to be, what that decision is going to be. There's your glasses running off from you. It comes up, for example, a guy's praying about a job. Shall I take a job here or a job there? We had a couple down in Florida who, when I was state director in Georgia, who had been in sin and they got saved and they separated. One went to another college and they both were studying in management consultant degree. They both made their degree. And in the meantime, the fellow in that pair went to a conference for a church. And a friend of mine, Moose Keller from Oklahoma City, was back there in that business, in a business, and invited this young man from his church to go with him. He went to that conference and got challenged about just committing his life to the Lord again and getting right with God. And he knew he'd broken up with the girlfriend because of help from a navigator guy. But he really wasn't firsthand God's yet. But it became that at that meeting, if I remember correctly. Well, I asked Arnold to help him. Well, that was Florida to Atlanta, but he runs all over the place anyway. So between the two of them, they started a deal down at this guy's cabin down on the water and the boats and all that stuff, and even had an all-nighter for boys and girls. And I thought, Arnold, what are you getting into here? These boys have been pretty bad about that. But they did a deal where they didn't take off their clothes. They worked all night, ate all night, went on the boat all night, had a great time. And when this couple graduated, they got married, and they had a decision. Where are we going for our jobs? Well, there were a lot of offers, and they needed them. Do you know how they decided? They decided, seek first his kingdom, and all these things will be given unto you. Matthew 6:33. They said, we're going to Atlanta to where we both can get help. And we'll trust God for the job. Dave Kopp and Arnold know we've had a lot of people come to Atlanta looking for a job. And then they start thinking about, I wonder how we could grow in the Lord here. So one guy comes and he moves up about 25 miles north of me. And I was about 10 miles north of him. And he expects to come to our Bible study, which is down there near his house. You could have asked for some advice before you did all that, you know. And then I start meeting with him, and I make the mistake one time of talking to him about we do believe in some kind of physical fitness. And if you and your wife are 50 pounds overweight, you and I got something to talk about. And I met his wife. I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm in trouble. Except when they invited us to eat at their house. Then I was in trouble because I ate so much. She was a cook. But it didn't work out. They had problems, had divorce and all that. But the thing is, they could have had help if they had moved in closer. And still he worked downtown. What are you living up there for? Well, that's a big deal. Horses and all of that. So I'm saying, seek wisdom in the word with your advice. We'll get to that in a moment. But it's not what you, not that you pray, it's what you pray. How do you pray about this decision? What, do you assume mostly negative or mostly positive? Neither one, I hope. But you should ask, if I make this decision, what do I have to have for this to work out? I have to assume I have air. I have breath. I have health. What else? I need, for this to work, that's what I think I need. Okay, God, what if this should happen? If this should happen? You ever have a guy buy a house and then lose his job? I've seen it. He forgot to say, God, can I afford this next year? I have a good job. No, yeah, we can buy this. We'll buy this big house. $570,000 home, that's nothing. Yeah, until you lose your job. Okay? Seek his wisdom in the word. Did I say that? How about continue often in prayer? I mean, often. Continue often in prayer. 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, pray continually. We can't really do that exactly, but we do. It says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything give thanks. Present your requests to God. But if you're fretting because the answer you wanted has been delayed, you got a problem of attitude. Because it's not delayed because he can't. It's not delayed because he doesn't love you. It's not delayed because he wants to punish you or something. It may be delayed because he wants you to learn to trust him. When do you have to have this? My friend this afternoon, I said, when do you need the money? When are you going to Germany or wherever you're going? Well, July. Well, I'm going to Sweden in July, but I don't need money for July now. Why don't I pray and set a time? God, I need to buy that ticket by such and such a time, or I can't go. He'll accept that. But don't go getting fretting. Oh, God hadn't answered. God hadn't confirmed yet. And I told my friend about that welder up there that helped us in our work, and he had a $6,000 bill. His wife is not quite as mature as he is in these matters, and she was really getting panicky. $6,000. He's independent welder for the Army up there. And all these equipment he has to rent and seal is brought in, and he has to pay for it. He said, I don't worry about it, Noah. God will take care of it. I don't need it till next Wednesday. Well, I'd be a little concerned, I think, because he's got to make sure the government doesn't get involved in a lawsuit or a bad debt or something, or he'd lose his contracts with the Army. But he felt God would do it. So I saw him the next week. I said, well, what happened yesterday? Well, what do you think happened? I went to the post office on Wednesday morning. I got the check. I went to the bank, put it in the check. I wrote a check and sent it to the Army and to the company, and everybody's happy. And my wife has finally settled down. Well, that's the way it works, isn't it? Well, that's great. He believed God's promises. Okay. Now, study the circumstances, and Arnold mentioned that. And by that, I mean all the circumstances. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer. Well, it may not be danger exactly, but it is when you think about that old house that my friend bought and cost him $4,000. Even then, he got a $14,000 new roof from the insurance company. But do you know how he got it? I tried to get up there and help him fix it, and he never would call me. I said, I've got the straws, I've got the tar. I can't get on the roof. My wife would shoot me, but I'll get in the attic and stick a straw up, and you slap some tar on it. We'll make it not leak in your kitchen anyway. Never did get the call. Never go, okay. And one day, well, what's happening to the roof, so-and-so? Well, you know what? My wife thought of something, and I hadn't even thought about it. She called the insurance company. Oh, for heaven. You mean you haven't even called it? No. Well, no, I didn't think about it. It's so old. I didn't think they'd even consider it. They paid for the whole thing, including the garage. And it was unfair. I don't think they should have paid it. That roof was bad when they moved in. But what he was praying about, what he was trusting in, what he wasn't doing bothered me. The circumstances are, at least ask your insurance agency, consider what is the damage and what can be done. What are the options? Who else is involved in this decision? The fact that you feel good about it, what does your wife feel about it? What does your parents feel about it? What does your organization feel about it? My brother lost his job by starting his own little packaging company while Merck Sharp and Dohme, regional sales manager, topped out every year in sales, but he's running all over Fort Worth and Dallas all the time. So he started topping into Teichus and Neiman Marcus and some of those places. Hey, you know, I could service your needs from right here in Arlington. And he did, and finally he found out they don't allow them to drive their Cadillacs and start your own business. So he got fired. So take careful note of the circumstances that are really related to this decision. Then what Arnold said, I'll give you a verse for it, about your own self-image. Romans 12:3. Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Boy, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. And by the way, I have a favorite verse of mine that's helped me. Ecclesiastes 8:5. This has to do if you're praying about a girl or a wife or a job or where to work, something like that. Ecclesiastes 8:5 says, a wise man's heart discerns both time and procedure. You may be doing the right thing, but it's the wrong time. I use this all the time to get these meatheads to quit trying to have a girl on their arm all the time. If they got a girl that God gave them and she's tied to their arm, that's all right. Otherwise, tell me why you need a girl when you're going to college and you've got 3 or 4 years to go and you're not getting your studies done anyway. You don't get your Bible study but half done. You're struggling with your verses. And now you need to have a little sweetheart to date. And tell me when you come home from that date that you're full of grace and truth and not thinking some sexual thoughts that you don't need to think. Maybe you do. I don't know. I quit dating for 10 years because I couldn't handle it. For me, it was God or girls, and I told my atheist barber, said, I won't bother you at night anymore. We shared a driveway, and I came in at 12 or 1 or 2 o'clock and wake him up sometimes. And I said, you'll be okay because I have chosen God or girls for me. And that's why I needed Jim Downing to come out to Pakistan and tell me it was time to quit praying and open my eyes. Because I was just, I didn't think about it. I couldn't. I just couldn't handle it until God's timing. And the last thing is this. It's going to be an act of faith. You will never know everything. Jim Downing also said one time, the will of God, speaking of the will of God, the general calling and so forth, is probably right here at the end of your nose. And it basically is. How God has blessed you, what God's doing in your life, how you've been used of God. All of that goes to say, well, you know, boy, I've done well here, done well there. And I play the guitar, and people like me to play the guitar, and blah, 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 blah. So then you just have to make a few decisions and go get you a job playing the guitar or some such. But be sure you know the time and the procedure. Last point is this. I said act in faith. Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is being sure of what we hope, certain of what we do not see. Well, it's hard to be certain. It's really going to be this act of faith I'm talking about. This is totally different context, but some interesting statements come out of this, Romans 14:22-23. It's a different context, but here's what it says. Blessed is the man who does not condemn himself in what he approves. So if this is the girl, and you've prayed about and done all these steps, now, Lord, here's the deal. Am I going to marry or am I not? Am I going to put a ring on her finger or am I not? He's not going to answer, yeah, do that. But you can look back with confidence. Here are promises. Here are the circumstances. Here are the pros and cons. Here are days that I've prayed these promises have been coming to me, and you've given me peace through them. And here's how it's gone in my counseling and people. Lord, I've done all I know to do. I ask you now to bless this marriage and this request to her or stop me some way or another. I don't want to hurt her. I don't want to offer something and not follow through on it. I don't want to ask her to marry me unless this is your will for our lives. And I leave it up to you. But I'm going to. With him, I wrote this letter. And then I had to think, as I told some guys the other night, well, okay, Jim, here it comes. But how do I know this is the girl he had in mind? He wouldn't tell me her name. He told me to figure that out. So I said, Lord, you've lost thousands of letters a day in Pakistan. Here's one that needs to be lost. Because this is going to Jim. And I told him, Jim, it may not be the girl you meant, but this is where I believe God's leading me. Please deliver it for her, and if you agree, and help me if it's not, and so forth, something like that. So he sent his wife and some girls and some other people from the Glen. They took it up to where Carrie was and delivered it to her. And then she wondered what this silly-looking letter was. But I had to do that because I don't know what he'll say. I don't know how this all works. But this is the way God is leading me, and he's told me, stop being so arrogant. If he, I am the Father of all lights, with whom there's no shadow of turning, if he's done that in my life and improved my performance and my victory over flesh and so forth these last 2 years or 2.5, I can trust God with her. She's his daughter. If he gives her to me, I better be ready. I better be more concerned about me than about her. So it worked out well. And that's what. Now, the conclusion of the matter is, each of these steps is a green light, and you miss one of them, you will have a great learning experience, whatever it is. Okay? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. God bless you, and bless the rest of the conference.